Did you know that just by calling Design Air Heating and Cooling, you may have the chance to throw out a first pitch at Busch Stadium? The number to call at Design Air Heating and Cooling is 314-739-1600. 314-739-1600. Just by calling Design Air Heating and Cooling, you'll be registered for the chance to throw out a first pitch and four all-inclusive tickets to that game. 314-739-1600. Visit designairservice.com. Proud partners of the Cardinals. Welcome into Scoops with DannyMac.com. My guest, Ed Wheatley, who heads up the Historical Society and Fan Club of the St. Louis Browns. The history of baseball in this city is remarkable because you have the St. Louis Cardinals, but never forget, you also had the St. Louis Browns. And this year, 2019, the 75th anniversary of the Streetcar Series featuring the 1944 Cardinals and Browns World Series. Ed Wheatley has done an amazing job of making sure to capture the 52 seasons the Browns were here in St. Louis. He wrote a book, and then that book turned into a movie, The St. Louis Browns, The Team Baseball Forgot. And now you have a new movie that's even a follow-up to that. A baseball legacy, fans remember the St. Louis Browns. So my guest is Ed Wheatley, and we get into so many different topics concerning the Browns, the great players that they've had, the great teams that they had, and the history of how baseball developed here in St. Louis. For some of you, you may not even know it, but the chairman of the Cardinals, owner Bill DeWitt, he has a long history here in St. Louis, which began well before the 1990s, the mid-1990s, when he bought the St. Louis Cardinals. It began as a young kid and his father being involved in the game of baseball with, you guessed it, the St. Louis Browns.
Well, my father got me going to games early. That was his career, baseball. And, you know, around Sportsman's Park in St. Louis, I used to go on the field. I'd have my own uniform. And, you know, when you get exposed to it like that, you just get hooked.
And your dad obviously means so much to the game of baseball. Can you give our fans an idea of his history and where it all began? Because some people may not realize this. He literally was selling the soda and the popcorn and the peanuts and the Cracker Jack, and that's kind of how he got his start, in a way, in the game of baseball.
Well, no question about it. He loved the game, and as a kid, he was 13, 14 years old. He used to go down to the ballpark and sell soda pop, and Branch Rickey asked the concessionaire, did he know of a good young kid that maybe he could bring into the front office as an office boy? And he recommended my father, and that's how he got started.
I hear the name Branch Rickey. When you think of Branch Rickey, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I knew him, as he was older, and he was just such a giant in the game. Very distinguished. Everybody called him Mr. Rickey, a great orator, great knowledge of the game. And, of course, he built the Cardinals farm system, which set up the great teams of the 20s and 30s and brought Jackie Robinson into the game. He was just an incredible man.
When you reflect on it now, did the impression he made on you, and you talk in great reverence of him, was it like that back then, or has it taken years to kind of reflect on just how important he was to the game now to realize his importance?
Now, when I was a young kid and came across him or was exposed to him, you got the idea that he had tremendous stature, and everyone admired him. Everybody looked up to him and respected him, and as I say, he had a tremendous presence. So I saw that at a young age.
Also at a young age, and your jersey is hanging in the Cardinals Hall of Fame with a famous promotion with Eddie Goodell. So explain how that all went down, and there's so many variations of the story that I've heard, but I want to get it from the chairman of the Cardinals, Bill DeWitt. His jersey, your jersey in the game, and now it's part of history.
Yeah, well, I had every spring I would get a uniform, and back then you couldn't really buy uniforms throughout the year. Fans weren't allowed to buy them, the official uniform that was. And so they had a limited number of them made at the beginning of the year, and they would, if they got torn, they'd patch them up and wear them. So I got a small one, being, I guess at that time, 12 years old, and when Bill Vec, my father and his brother had sold the Browns to Bill Vec, he had all kinds of antics going on. And my father came to me one day and he said, you know, we need your uniform because Bill Veeck's got this thing where he's got a midget coming, which is what they called little people back then. And he said, you know, they need your uniform. It's the only one that'll fit him. And so that I said, okay. And he wore the uniform, and it, once it was over, I got it back. They changed the number. It had number 6 on it, but, you know, they moved it to 1. It took this number 6 off, made it 1/8, and, of course, today it still has 1/8 on it.
There's so many stories like that and many more chronicled in the movie A Baseball Legacy, Fans Remember the St. Louis Browns, which is coming out, and also the St. Louis Browns, the team baseball forgot. Ed Wheatley will be my guest. Looking for a spot to host your fantasy football draft? Look no further than Westport Social, located in Westport Plaza. Jumbo TVs, ice cold beer, nachos, wings, private spaces to connect your computers. Westport Social is your football headquarters. Visit westportsocial-stl.com for more information. We're coming to you in brilliant clarity by Lordo's Diamonds, located in the heart of Ladue. And get your jewelry at Lordo's Diamonds, lordosdiamonds.com. Nice long visit coming up with Ed Wheatley.
Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Ed Wheatley has done this movie one time and now a second time. And it's a follow-up on what really the Browns are all about. The history, the players, the families, and certainly the fans. And Ed Wheatley joins me. And Ed, let's talk a little bit about number one. I just want to get a general question out there, and for fans that are curious as to why you do this, what interested you in finding out more about the Browns and the other team outside the Cardinals and baseball here in St. Louis?
Well, I grew up in St. Louis, and I had awareness of baseball. I like to think I'm somewhat of a baseball historian. And growing up, my dad had played professional baseball, and he played there was a big semi-pro league in the 50s and early 60s in St. Louis, and there was a lot of former Browns who played in those leagues, and I was a bat boy and got to know these guys. And as I said, as you study baseball history, it was like, you know, there's a piece missing. I mean, especially for St. Louis, which is a great baseball town, and part of the thing that makes it a great baseball town was the Browns. I mean, you know, when people came to watch baseball in St. Louis, they got to watch the National League and the American League, which I think is a credit to why we have had such an intelligent fan base, because, I mean, you could see Ruth and Gehrig and Williams and, you know, DiMaggio and all these great American League players while you're also watching the National League with the Cardinals. But there was this passion in our town for the Browns that, you know, it still exists when you think about the Brooklyn Dodgers don't have a fan club at all. The Philadelphia Athletics do not. The Boston Braves, one man puts out a little letter a couple times a year, but no things like we have almost 700 members across the country, 35 states, and we have big events every year like we're going to have one coming up this month that people will attend. And it was really to feed that passion and remembrance. So many people say that was my dad's team. That was my grandpa's team. I remember him wearing a Browns hat. I wanted to take people back to that time and learn about it, but I also wanted to keep that memory alive.
Absolutely, and you've done a remarkable job. You are the fan club president, and Ed, how did you start that, and when did you start it, and what goes into that? I know it's a broad-based question. You could probably talk for an hour about it, but give me just the Cliff Notes version of that.
Well, the Cliff Note real quick is the fan club was created in 1984 by a gentleman, Bill Borst. He created it. He saw that there was, at that time in 84, a fan club in Brooklyn when he went to P.B. Reese's induction in the Hall of Fame and said, why isn't there anything being done for these men who played for the Browns? And it was created. I would go to the luncheons and enjoy all the getting involved in the thing. And then when I retired several years ago in 2016, it was to the point there was a transition, and I said I would step in. Then I also looked for a way to keep this fervor going, and I initiated the book that became very, very popular across the country that then led to the PBS movie, which was extremely popular, which now leads to the sequel that you just spoke of.
Tell me, first of all, and we'll get into the sequel, but the St. Louis Browns, the team baseball for God. Tell me a little bit about that and your research and what is involved in that.
Well, we have some pieces of Browns history for our fan club, but unfortunately, most of it was destroyed when the Orioles bought the Browns. They basically said, the Browns died. They were buried in St. Louis. Their legacy did not come east. And Baltimore then chose to honor their long history in the American Association and their great dynasty of minor league baseball. And that's really what they honor, and they believe their franchise began in 1954. So I've gone around trying to collect as much artifacts, memorabilia, use that as research. And, the thing about, I always tell people, and I joke, when you write or make a movie about the Browns, you don't have to be a very creative author because they were creative in themselves with their own stories.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of baseball, is the stories that are out there and the men and their nicknames and just the things that happened with this Browns organization that made them lovable to so many people.
When you decided to do the first movie, as you talked about, you wrote a great book, and I would tell any baseball fan, especially those here in St. Louis, and I got goosebumps thinking about it right now, go through it and look at the history and the job that you did in finding these folks and their loved ones and stories behind the men and the pictures. I'm curious how you were able to get all that, because, Ed, I love going to Kansas City, and I go to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And unfortunately, and it's just a part of life, many of those Negro Leaguers are no longer with us, and it'll be a part of our American history that'll be literally gone, dead, and those men are gone. And then it's their family. But, you have stories that are passed down from generation to generation, and it's kind of like, well, this is a little folktale. This is, true, I think. How were you able to kind of dive through all that to find the true story behind these men?
Well, and just like you spoke of the Negro League, the Browns had 764 men who played for them.
Right.
Today, there are only 10 living former Browns players alive. So it was digging and not quitting. The book was the way I designed it. What I wanted was a coffee table book loaded with pictures of players, of memorabilia, items that either led to a story or I'd have a story and I would go find memorabilia tied to the story. And, to me, even though we only have 10 Browns left and, just a few dozen Negro League players, I always tell people, they say, well, you're going to quit. No, this is a heritage we're going to keep alive. We have round tables and historic events about the Civil War, about World War I, World War II. We can keep these players' memories alive. And by making it attractive and bringing out these pictures of memorabilia. And one of the things that's just amazing is that people come to us. Once they knew we were doing this, I would have people come and drop off boxes of papers or things I had, all the people when Bill Veeck, anybody was born in St. Louis when Bill Veeck was the owner, they got a letter from Bill Veeck with tickets to bring their parents to delivered to Little Miss so-and-so. Here's two tickets, bring your parents to a game. Or, if you're a boy, you got a contract to show up in 18 years for spring training tryouts. People were digging these out. People were bringing, baseballs signed by Browns in the 20s and 30s. And, we reach out. We talk to the families. We go to the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City, as you spoke, when we wanted to get into the Thompson and Willard Brown piece where, few people know the St. Louis Browns put the third and fourth African-American on the field, but they were the first team to have two black players on the field at the same time. And, these are things that are forgotten. And then, we go into the Hall of Fame up in Cooperstown. And, we just kept pushing and pushing and looking for answers, and we got a pretty good story.
Before I get into the second movie that you've created, give me the reaction of folks around baseball or even just the general public of the first movie that you put out.
Well, the first book and, movie, the first movie was based on the book. It got awarded and selected Best book published in 2017 by certain publications. It got nominated for some Sabre Awards. And that's when it was like, you know, this is a great story, one that really nobody knows about. And that led to the creation of a movie. We can tell it. I mean, and, you know, we worked with Ken Burns' template and model, and we've talked to Ken Burns about our film and got his feedback. And, you know, we wanted to tie the team to the times in the United States because when, you know, we always say when you're talking about the Browns, you're talking about the first half of the 1900s in our country. And for so many people, this is the beauty of baseball, as I found out working this, you know, people who were born, who are in their 80s and 90s now, they lived through two world wars when the Browns' tenure was. They lived through the Great Depression. So they had a very rough life, not knowing, you know, did they have money for food or, you know, none of the opulence that you have today, none of the social thing. I mean, there wasn't TV even in this most of this period. They didn't have, you know, all the places to go eat, and, you know, they just had, could they have money to have food at home? But the one thing that was good in their lives, the good memories, you know, during these times of poverty, during these times of food shortages and other shortages, the good thing was baseball. And that's what I think we really triggered in both these films, and that's really the basis of this new film, is it's the memories, because that was the good remembrance of their lives during this period of poverty and war and that.
Give me the best piece of memorabilia that means something to you that you've been able to come across. I'm curious about that.
Well, I'll tell you a couple, but one of the ones that I was just amazed at, and you talk about people's success, the success of our movie and our luncheons, you know, we'll have 300, maybe 400 people come to our luncheons every year. And it was like the movie was creating people asking for more, wanting to get involved. So I started doing roundtables. And I would pick a topic. You know, we do a winter roundtable and a late fall roundtable just to keep the baseball fervor alive. And I picked George Sisler as an example for the one roundtable. We had his grandsons in who were, you know, in their 60s, who knew him well, knew all his stories. And I had all the people come. And we talked about, you know, the great George Sisler, probably one of the greatest men to ever play baseball, but greatest Hall of Famer that nobody knows about. And we did it. One guy walks in to this meeting with 8 bats, game-used bats, because our focus was George Sisler, 1920s. 1922 Browns team is one of the best Browns teams in all of baseball, one of the best baseball teams ever. He walks in with the 8 game-used bats of the starting lineup of the 1922 Browns.
Wow.
And, you know, when we have these roundtables, I leave a long period of time, like, we're going back to third, fourth, or fifth grade elementary school, and it's show and tell, guys. The mic is open. Bring up your stuff and tell about it. You know, one guy had a uniform from the 1920s of the Browns, or, you know, people bring their scorecards, or, you know, Roger Hornsby, when he was playing for the Browns, he signed my ball here. Let me show you, you know. And you know, that makes it personal for people and makes pride for these people, and that's really how I keep the Browns' memory, by keeping the people's pride in the team and what they meant to these people.
George Sisler had 257 hits, which was in a single season, and I believe that was in 1920.
Mm-hmm.
That was a major league record until Ichiro broke that in 04, I believe.
Right, right.
And when he came through in 09 with the All-Star game,
correct.
He visited his gravesite.
That is correct.
I'm curious to pay his respects. I'm curious if Ichiro or any of his people around him reached out to you or vice versa about Sisler and the history of those two great men.
Well, yeah, we had one gentleman who talked to us about Ichiro, and most of it really came from the Sisler family. The two Sisler grandsons and granddaughter, who not only were up with their mother, Sisler's daughter, in Seattle when Ichiro broke the record, but they were with him when they came here in 2009 when he came to the All-Star game. It's when he went and visited the grave. Just how much Sisler meant, and it's just, it was the story about how the Sisler family, you know, just was overwhelmed by the respect of Ichiro talking you know, about Sisler and about what an honor it was. And, you know, it's one of those things, you know, he broke the record, got a lot more at-bats because, A, they played more games in that year versus the 1920s. But, you know, it was a respectful thing. It was an honor. You know, that was one of the prideful things of George Sisler. I mean, you got to remember, 2021 and 22, those 3 years, he averaged over 400. 3 years in a row, his average was over 400.
It's incredible. Ed Wheatley is my guest, and I want to get into the second movie that he has put together, A Baseball Legacy, Fans Remember the St. Louis Browns. We'll do that in a moment.
Hey, St. Louis, it's Matt Carpenter. The most rewarding thing for me is to be able to play in front of the best fans in baseball. A close second is the Snooks Rewards app because it simplifies my shopping. It helps me organize my shopping list by easily finding items that are organic, heart-healthy, whatever I'm looking for. There is also a really cool feature that helps you locate items in the store. So when you're looking for my salsa, just type in Mojo Salsa and the app will tell you where to find it. Simplify shopping. Download the Snooks Rewards app today.
Are you ready for the boys of summer? Well, pull up a front row seat at Hot Shot Sports Bar and Grill for all the Cardinals action this season at one of their 11 area locations. During every Cardinals game, you can enjoy the new Hot Shots Triple Play Special featuring a large pizza, order of boneless wings, and a bucket of Bud Family bottles, available for a great price. Also, be sure to join the party on the last Tuesday of each month this season for Hot Shots Ticket Tuesday, and your shot to score a pair of tickets to an upcoming game. Don't forget to score $1 Hot Shots tacos any day after the Cardinals score 8 or more runs. Hot Shots, proud home of Cardinal fans since 1990. Your home for all the games, all the time. Find a Hot Shots location near you. HotShotsNet.com. My guest, Ed Wheatley, and Ed, the St. Louis Browns Historical Society and Fan Club President, has a movie that is out already that's been just an incredible hit for baseball fans, the St. Louis Browns, The Team Baseball Forgot, which is a follow-up to his book, which he put together on the Browns, which we've talked about. And now it's out, A Baseball Legacy, Fans Remember the St. Louis Browns. Ed, this is something that, as I've talked about, it's a labor of love for you. Tell me about the second version now of what you have out and how this is a little bit different from the first movie that you put together.
Right. The first movie really followed the book and told basically what I'll call a chronological history of the Browns franchise, and you know, there are interesting stories in there, and you know, it was set viewership records for the PBS station in St. Louis, and you know, people just came out of the woodwork, and it's, you know, what I was finding in the book tour, and you know, I give a lot of talks on the Browns and baseball, and everything we do, I'll just up front say, haven't made a penny on any of this because it all goes to charity. And I believe in going to retirement homes or, you know, libraries. Anybody that wants to hear a story of the Browns or baseball, old-time baseball, just contact us. We'll come and we do it for free. And I would do these talks, you know, and there'd be 200-300 people, and sometimes there's 30 people. But I found the passion. And when PBS came back to him and said, your movie was so successful, what do you think of a second one? What would you do? And it was like, let's talk about the love affair of the fans. They still have, whether it's people who saw the game, you know, a lady, this is my ticket from the 44 World Series. See, I was there. Or, you know, the people, you know, I think about 50,000 people were at the Eddie Gaedel game, you know, even though the box score shows about 2,000. I mean, those historic events, everybody has a memory of them. But, you know, it's like even young children, even you know, people in their 40s whose father or grandfather was a diehard Browns fan. You know, and sometimes it's interesting because families, you know, we have one gentleman in our film, his grandmother was a diehard Browns fan. His grandfather was a diehard Cardinal fan. And, you know, they didn't always see eye to eye when it was baseball. And it's these stories that, you know, the love of the game, the love of the team, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, they were, you know, a blue-collar team or a white-collar team. I think they were, you know, before the Cubs, they were the lovable losers. I mean, the Browns lost 1,000 more games than they won. But people always felt like this was going to be the year. This would be the thing. And they had such colorful figures. And people, they cling to these memories. And as I've spoken before, you know, they didn't have the best of times when a lot of these people were growing up and baseball was the good, positive piece of their life. And they have these mementos. And the other thing, I wanted to capture their stories, their memories as fans. I also wanted to do a little bit of an antique roadshow where people bring in these mementos that they're so proud of. And, you know, that's really becomes the basis. You know, why is it that this team that lost 1,000 more games, why do they have a fan club still? 66 seasons after they played, the Brooklyn Dodgers don't, the Philadelphia Athletics don't. Why is there this Browns team? And I think they meant that much to people, and it meant that much to the city of St. Louis, because this was the other thing we wanted to do is something in a positive view for the city of St. Louis. You know, we've had some downtimes a little bit lately, but we have found from the first movie and this second one, you know, we hope to paint a very positive picture. We've been all over the country. We were selected with our first film to be a part of the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown's film series, and to take the story of the Browns. And we taught a bunch of people from the Northeast. There was this team called the Browns, and they have a pretty good, colorful history.
What's been the response from family members? Because you reach out, I know, to a lot of the family members in this film and those that are touched by the Browns, whether it's a connection with their father, their mother, their brother, their sister, whatever. Give me an idea of the connection of family in particular with this one.
Family's become very, very important. It's, you know, I think it's we evoke the pride that they were ball players. And now they're getting the attention that, you know, has never been there because, as we said, nobody promotes the Browns. I will put an asterisk on that, and I will give Bill DeWitt and the Cardinals, you know, a thank you because they do help with the promotion. That, you know, they're extremely great partners with us. And I also think it says something very special that the Cardinals have a statue in their ring of statues outside of George Sisler. And cool Papa Bell.
That's right.
You know, they honor two men who never played for their team, and I think that's very good. But I think it just shows what a city and a baseball city we have here. But what it has elicited, you know, the first thing I started doing, and I did this on purpose in our book, at the back, I listed all 764 men who played for the Browns, and how many times I'm at book signings or just a talk and somebody goes, that was my uncle, or, you know, that was my great-grandfather. I want to show you, you know, whether it was, you know, some guy, you know, 1920s, 19-teens played, and all of a sudden we're giving him the limelight by talking about the Browns. You know, they can actually touch him on that page almost, and you know, that just, it's special. Or, you know, you hear people who tell the stories of these are amazing in these times today. They would take, as a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid, take 3 streetcars, like from University City to Sportsman's Park, just because they love the Browns. They go watch the game every day, you know. Or they get out of school, they have their Brownie Brigade card, which was like the Browns version of the Cardinals not holding. But can you imagine letting your young child, 9 years old, take 3 streetcars downtown today?
Yeah.
But it just shows the difference of the time, and that's where these good memories I spoke of come from. But the families they really have kind of a thank you to us because now we're making some of their relatives relevant again, putting them in a spotlight.
Absolutely. Ed, you mentioned the name of Bill DeWitt, and especially for our younger fans, they may not realize that the chairman of the Cardinals is Bill DeWitt Jr., and then you have his dad, Bill DeWitt, who was the Browns GM and then later owned the team. And then you have Bill DeWitt III, who is the current Cardinals president.
Right.
So for fans that don't know, tell us about the DeWitt's connection in many ways to the St. Louis Browns.
Well,
and also they're featured in the film.
They are featured in the film. They, you know, a lot of parts talking. And as I said, they're great partners. And people don't really realize, you know, Bill DeWitt Sr. has an extreme role in baseball history. Not only was he a longtime general manager, they called it executive in those days, but general manager from the Browns. He also went and created the Cincinnati Reds 1961 World Series team, and then as a general manager, he built the what would become the Big Red Machine and even owned the Reds for a while. But he was the first man to be general manager of the year in two in the American League and National League. But he got his start with Branch Rickey. You know, Branch Rickey actually got his start with the Browns, got into a little fuss with the owner of the Browns, Philip DeCatsby Ball, because Branch Rickey wanted to create, invent, if you will, the farm system, the minor league system, develop players. And DeCatsby Ball didn't want to spend the money, so he went over to the Cardinals. And, you know, he built the great Cardinal farm system that produced all those World Series appearances in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. But he had Bill DeWitt working for him, came up through the ranks, actually started selling soda and stuff, and got working up into the front office. And it was Branch Rickey who sent Bill DeWitt Sr. over to the Browns, and then he started running the Browns under the different owners. And then, like you said, he eventually owned the Browns with his brother, Charlie, in the late 40s before they sold it to Bill Veeck. But it also then brought Bill DeWitt Jr., our Cardinal CEO, into the play, because there's so many pieces of history with Bill Jr. and the Browns. He was a bat boy in uniform. Many famous pictures. There's the famous picture when Babe Ruth came to St. Louis in late June of 1948, just weeks before he died. He came here for an American Legion event, and these great pictures of Babe Ruth showing a young Bill DeWitt Jr., showing him how to swing a bat, and Bill DeWitt is dressed in his St. Louis Browns bat boy uniform. And that uniform would go into even greater immortality a few years later when Bill Veeck pulled his stunt, shenanigans, whatever, and had Eddie Gaedel, the 3-foot, 7-inch pinch hitter, come to bat. Well, it was Bill DeWitt's uniform that was used for Eddie Gaedel to have a uniform that day. And, you know, it's just so many stories that takes us back to these periods of the Browns, you know, through the DeWitt family. And, I mean, they see the DeWitts thinking, oh, they came around in 1996, you know, when the Cardinals were purchased by the current owners. But, no, their history really goes back to the 19-teens. Long-standing family here in St. Louis.
You know what I love, too, about that uniform with Bill DeWitt and Eddie Gaedel, who now it's commonly referred to as Little People, midget, but Little People. I asked Bill DeWitt, I think it may have been with Junior and the third, and I said, now, where did you find the uniform? And they said, and I mean years later, decades later, and they said, you know, we think that uniform was used for Halloweens in our family. People were just kind of passing it around, and we didn't really kind of have the historical significance maybe of what that meant. I don't want to speak for him, but I'm kind of paraphrasing.
Right. Well, he's told me the same story.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, it is. It's just and, crazy. You know, I mean, I remember a couple years ago we had a thing when the Cardinals had Eddie Gaedel bobblehead night, and we were down on the field. Bill Jr., Bill III, and they brought the uniform out, which is in the Cardinals Hall of Fame. I mean, it's just one of those priceless pieces.
Yes.
You know, go to the Hall of Fame. There it is. The most iconic number in all baseball. The number was 1/8.
That's right.
You know, the fraction. And it was actually on the scorecard that day, too. But, you know, with the way Bill Veeck did things, you never knew what anything meant, because he would never tell you what was going to happen. He wanted you to come, because that's how you would, you know, the surprise, see what's coming. But, I mean, yeah, they had the jersey there on the field, and, you know, they took it out of the Hall of Fame, and it was like almost touching, you know, the Shroud of Turin or something, you know, from a baseball piece, that there was the Eddie Gaedel jersey.
It's incredible. We have a final segment coming up, and my guest is Ed Wheatley, St. Louis Browns Historical Society and Fan Club president. He's got a second movie out. He's got the book out. The first movie is out, and we'll get a little bit more into that in just a moment. Hair Saloon for Men, proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Home base in St. Louis, founded in 1997. 16 locations. You'll receive the perfect haircut, complimentary beverage,
relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all for just $22. And for an extra $5, get a stress-relieving scalp massage. Hair Saloon for Men, 16 locations. There's one near you. Hair Saloon for Men. Ed Wheatley, my guest, St. Louis Browns Historical Society and Fan Club President. And Ed, I want to get into a few things here because I'm sure we have piqued the interest of many, many people that have the chance to listen to this and said, I kind of heard about it. I didn't know about it. What are some of the events that you have coming up, and how do people get involved with the society and with the fan club?
Well, you know, just say, hey, I want to be a part of it and volunteer. You know, we do have membership, very minimal. You can join for $30 to whatever you want. We put all the money to supporting this team's legacy. We have an annual luncheon every year. Our next luncheon is on August 21st, Wednesday afternoon. I do two things with these luncheons. One, we want to do them in the afternoon, so those seniors who want to come and feel more comfortable driving in the day, it's easier that way. We also try to keep them very cheap. We get a great lunch. We have down at the Holiday Inn, Route 66 at Watson and Lindbergh is where it's held. And we work with them and put out a great lunch. But we also try to keep it as cost prohibitive as possible. You know, it's for $37 for members, $47 for non-members. Not the $100 a plate, not knocking those, but I want people to come. Our legacy is about creating memories, not profits. So the luncheon this year is going to honor the 1944 World Series between the Browns and the Cardinals. This is the 75th anniversary, and it's kind of been very quiet and untouched here in St. Louis this year. But Bill DeWitt Jr. and Bill III are going to be there with some of the Cardinal front office. We got Cardinal legend Don Larson coming in. Everybody forgets that he was a rookie in 1953 with the Browns before he went to Baltimore and was traded to Yankees and had that fabulous day in October 1956. We've got Tom Jordan, the oldest living Major League Baseball player. He played with the Browns in 48. Hometown, anybody who's been involved in baseball and sports in St. Louis knows Eddie Mickelson. He played for both the Browns and the Cardinals, and then he had a tremendous career in coaching at University City and Parkway school districts. We've also got Art Shamsky, local St. Louis boy. He's coming back, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the 50th anniversary of the amazing Mets World Series. Now, on the 1944 World Series, we're going to have a panel discussion that we're going to go through how did the Cardinals and Browns make it to the World Series in 1944. It's a very, very special year. I mean, the war's going on, and when, you know, the season starts, D-Day had not even happened. They didn't even know what was going to happen with the war. Things weren't as rosy yet, you know, because they had yet to invade Europe. What was happening in America? But the thing that was really happening in America, a movie came out with Judy Garland called Meet Me in St. Louis. And it had that popular song everybody was singing, theoretically, in the 40th anniversary of the 1904 World's Fair is what the movie was about, and the song was Meet Me in St. Louis. Did anybody realize that you would be meeting me in St. Louis in October as both teams played? And we tell that whole story and just a little piece of history. The best movie was not Meet Me in St. Louis that year. It was Going My Way, starring Bing Crosby. And if you watch that movie, you'll see Bing Crosby wearing a Browns jacket, a Browns hat, and a Browns sweatshirt throughout most of the movie. So how ironic is that this movie was made? I guess it was, you know, a prophecy of what was to come. But the Browns win the last game of the season. They beat the Yankees. They win. The Cardinals had won by 14 and a half games over the Pirates. So we get to the World Series. We're going to take it game by game and just kind of have a little analysis of the game from a panel discussion. But we have about a dozen other former major leaguers who all, hey, I want to come. Can we be a part of this? So we're going to have a great day in August 21st. And then, as I spoke, we have roundtables where we'll pick a topic. We did George Sisler. We did Roy Sievers as a roundtable, and his family came, and all the people from Beaumont High School where he graduated, you know, had a big thing about him, and we did a big tale of Roy Sievers. And we did one that has turned into something special, and it's led to a lot of talks and a lot of other projects. The impact of the integration of Major League Baseball in St. Louis, because St. Louis had a key, as I spoke earlier with Hank Thompson and Willard Brown being the third and fourth players. But if you really take it and you go back to Branch Rickey and George Sisler, yeah, Rickey signed Jackie Robinson, sent him to Montreal in 46. He was with the Dodgers then. He took George Sisler and said, mentor him, tell me when he's ready. And then he had all these Browns ties. And then it turns out that the Brooklyn Dodgers manager was Bert Schotten, former Browns catcher. And then the second man to play in baseball as an Afro-American was Larry Doby, signed with the Cleveland Indians by Bill Veeck, who's also going to have the Browns on his resume. So all these things circled around St. Louis, but St. Louis was the center where the first time Bill DeWitt Sr. decided, hey, I want some good players, and he reached out and got the two African-Americans from the Monarchs. But he also was looking at the St. Louis community. We have a large African-American community in St. Louis, and let's attract them to Sportsman's Park. And it turned out to be very exciting and a very rewarding experience. And we got a couple. We're going to have one with Bill Veeck is the theme, and Mike Veeck has said he would like to come to St. Louis and talk to the crowd. We'll get the Bill Veeck memories. Some people, you know, still hold a grudge. But, I mean, the man was just the P.T. Barnum of baseball. He was really the Charlie Finley before Charlie Finley. You know, you take Charlie Finley, George Steinbrenner, put them together, you got Bill Veeck.
Sure, sure. I'm going to wrap it up with a couple of more things here. But the streetcar series, what was amazing is that Marty Marion was the MVP that year for the Cardinals. And there were six players on that team that had more home runs and six players that had a better batting average. And I don't think the one thing that I've done in my research for games on Fox Midwest is I don't think people realize just how good that team was defensively. They had a .982 fielding percentage. They committed only 112 errors. They turned 162 double plays. So that was going to be a tough one for the Browns. Now,
well, not only that, the Cardinals had been there in 42 and 43.
Exactly. Yeah.
You had the MVP of Mark Cooper in 42 and Stan Musial in 43. And you got Marty Marion, the MVP of the National League in 44. So you're facing three of the previous year's MVPs in that lineup.
Absolutely. Let's get the number out to make sure, Ed, that people know where they can contact you or website and best way to make sure that they can get involved with this.
To get involved or to get tickets to this luncheon on August 21st or any of the roundtable events or to become a member. And the one thing we put out for all members, we have a magazine called Pop Flies that we publish twice a year, sometimes three times. We have a special edition on the 44 World Series this year that all members receive. Telling all about baseball history focused around the Browns. But you can email us, and we'll send you all the information at stlbrowns@swbell.net. That's stlbrowns@swbell.net. Or you can call 314-608-9977.
And finally, too, I want to ask you this. For fans that maybe did not see either one of the movies, can they download them? Where would they find those?
You can
and the
go
book?
To the Nine Network, and you can stream it and download it. Or, you know, you can come to us through those two email or phone, and we can get you a copy.
It's outstanding. Ed, you've done an unbelievable job with this in keeping these memories and these men alive, and you're to be commended. Thank you so much, and I absolutely love the movies and the book. It's great stuff.
Well, thank you for being a partner with us, and thank you for helping us get the word out.
Believe me, it's an honor and a privilege. Thanks, Ed.